Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
If I had sex with your sister, I can certainly have sex with your mother. Where am I going to put that stuff? Is it just me? It is? Oh, okay, fine. Okay.
And now, today's episode.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh, no, it's not.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Guess who I am? That's right. Welcome to the program. Sit down, relax. I'll take it from here. I know what I'm doing, believe me. This isn't my first rodeo, but it is my second bar mitzvah. Wouldn't that be great if that was an actual phrase that people used? None of this rodeo crap, you know? Oh, it's not my first rodeo. What are you? What are you, a cowboy? What are you talking about? More fitting would be, hey, this isn't my first bar mitzvah. Oh, wow. You must be experienced. That's right. Can you imagine going through life saying, hey, guess what I wrote? Oh, did you write a book? No. I wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. That was you? Yes. I don't even know what's in the Dead Sea Scrolls. I have no idea. I guess it's all about the Dead Sea in a scrolling form. This is before they had books. They used to put commandments on tablets. Tiny little aspirin pills. Yeah, they did that. Yeah. Tablets. And then the cavemen and the cavewomen, shouldn't leave them out because otherwise, you know, there's big problems. Cavemen and cavewomen, the cave people, they used to write on the walls. And in certain neighborhoods in New York, they're still doing that on subways. So, you know, they used to write on walls, on the cave walls. They didn't have any paper. Yeah, yeah. And that's the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's like, you're going to write a book? I'm not going to write a scroll, I think. I'm going to write a scroll. You think someone actually sat down and wrote the Bible? I guess it was a number of people. I'm not really up on that. But I think it was a number of contributing artists, storytellers. I really don't know. I don't know how that worked. I don't know if it was like a publishing company back then. And they said, we're going to put together some fables, some stories that'll uplift people, give them a reason for living. How about that? And we'll embed in it rules and regulations and scare the hell out of them with some stories, okay? You want to do that? Sure. Let's gather a group of writers and put this baby together, huh? I don't think it'll ever sell. Oh, I think it will. I don't think it will. Look, it'll sell. This isn't my first bar mitzvah. I guarantee you this book's going to sell, man. All right, all right, all right. Anyway, welcome to the program. My name is Ron Van Dam. If you're not familiar with me, then I don't know how you got here, because it's the only way you'd know. Yeah, yeah. You know, I have spent half of my life saying to myself, I'm going to write a book. I actually wrote one book. If you go to Amazon, you've heard of this? Have you heard of Amazon? It's a tiny little mom-and-pop shop. On Amazon, which was originally just a website that sold books, it's all they did, and Dead Sea Scrolls and things like that. Yeah, on Amazon you'll find the one book that I've written so far, and it's called "Shut Up, I'm Walking Down the Aisle." It's available. You have to buy it. I think it's still there. When it came out, it did really, really well. Since then, nothing. Just nothing. You couldn't even line a birdcage floor with this stuff. I was a wedding videographer for decades and decades, owned my own company, did rather well with it, I might say. And so I decided with a DJ to write a book, to write a scroll. And it was about weddings. But it was interesting because it was, having been in the wedding industry, it was all about what goes on behind the scenes at weddings and all the stress that brides, especially brides, get so stressed about this stuff. Brides planning weddings and the expenses and what people are saying behind your back, what people in the industry are saying behind your back, how they're financially raping you down to the bone. Yeah, it's an incredible industry where people just make up numbers and charge you that. It's just, it's amazing. The markup is amazing. So I wrote a book about it, and it's a comedy book. It's all funny stuff. It's not stuff that actually happened. It's what people are actually saying behind your back when you plan a wedding. It's very revealing. I spend a lot of time in the book talking about choosing chicken for your dinner at your reception. Yeah, I mean, without chickens, there'd be no weddings. I'm telling you, nobody would eat. Nobody would eat. So the book is called "Shut Up, I'm Walking Down the Aisle." Look for it. Google it. You'll probably find it on the Google search thing. And there you go, man. Anyway. So, So I'm looking to write another book. And I've been looking to do this for, I'd say, about 10 years. I've been talking about writing another book. Writing a book is very cathartic. It can be. And I've reached a stage in my life where it's time to review. And I, you know, I've been around long enough to know that life is just not what it was supposed to be. It's not at all. Everything that you've learned as a child about how glorious, it's not. It's what it can be, but it's not. It's a test of a human being's endurance. It's a test of their mental endurance. That's what life really is. There's some fun along the way, like listening to this program on a daily basis. That's fun. There's some good TV shows. You know, other than that, there's really not really much going on. Anyway, you get very involved in family, you know, which is wonderful, but then you realize that's caused me a lot of stress too. Rather than write the Bible again, which I could do, I just don't have time because I'm so busy. Rather than write the Bible again, I was going to write the Book of Stress. Yeah, the Book of Stress. I don't know if it would be titled that, but that's what it is. It's the Book of Stress. It's the stuff we all go through, but we're not man or woman enough to actually write about it. Yeah, you know, a lot of people, you know, shouldn't stress. It's bad for you. That's not even a half of it. It's not even a half of it. It's your ability to shut things out. That's why, and I've talked about this before on the show, that's why God created cheerleaders. God actually purposely created cheerleaders. How else could these things survive? I mean, there'd be no such thing as a cheerleader. Come on, man. That's why you don't see like 30, 40, 50-year-old cheerleaders wearing cheerleading costumes. You don't see that. You know why? Because it's not that funny anymore. There's nothing much to cheer about at a certain age. You can cheer when you're a teenager because you don't know. You don't know. You're looking forward to getting your first car and to banging everything in sight. You don't know. You don't know. But then when life starts and you get a job and you have to, you know, put up with that and deal with other people on a real basis, get married, have children, and then you got bosses and supervisors, and then you got to go to the doctor, and it's just... it starts getting you can't, there's nothing to cheer about anymore. There's nothing to cheer about. So you don't see a lot of older cheerleaders. Also, they don't fit in a uniform anymore. But you could get a new uniform, but it's not even worth it at that point. Yeah, I mean, you know, what can I tell you? What can I tell you, man? Anyway, welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. Thank you so much for being here. In doing so, you're serving your country in a way that you never thought you'd serve. And that's by listening to a podcast every day or turning the radio on and listening to me. That's how you're serving your country. I don't know exactly the specifics involved, but that's what it is. Indeed. Indeedy do. It is a Tuesday, which it came after Monday again. The day after this is Wednesday, which is the inauguration of a new president, President Biden, and Vice President Harris. I'm looking forward to that like nothing before, in the sense that we need a new kind of look going on here. We need something good. So I'm excited about that. At the same time, a little nervous about the ceremony itself. I call Joe. I call him Joe Biden. We're on a first-name basis. Well, he doesn't know who I am, but I'm on a first-name basis with him. And I called Joe up, and I said, Joe, I left a message. He wasn't there. I left a message and said, Joe, this is Ron Van Dam. I do a show. You don't know who I am, but I have a piece of advice. Have the inauguration inside, because I'm telling you, doing it outside serves no purpose whatsoever. Here's the deal, Joe. We're in the middle of a pandemia. Unfortunately, we're still in the middle of it. I don't know how that happened, but we're still in the middle of it. Again, contrary to what the prior president said, we're still in the middle of it. It's getting worse every day. Cool, that's wonderful, huh? So, Joe, you got a built-in excuse not to have it outside. Have it inside, because you can't invite a lot of people anyway. The public can't be there because you don't want crowds going on. That's the last thing you want. So do it inside. Do it inside somewhere. Do it inside the Capitol. I understand that's pretty well fortified these days since last week. Do it inside. What are you doing with the thing outside? And Joe said, look, Ron, that is your name, isn't it? And I said, yeah, that isn't my name. Joe said to me, look, Mr. Van Dam, look, Ron, this isn't my first bar mitzvah. And we want to give the appearance of tradition. All the inaugurations are outside, usually in the freezing cold weather with vapor coming out of our mouths, you know, because of the so cold outside and our breath is so hot. We want that. We want that image, that picture. And I said, Joe, the image, the picture has changed this year, whether you like it or want to admit it or not. Have it inside. There are so many wedding venues that aren't using their function hall right now, because they can't have gatherings of more than like 25 people at a wedding. If that, I don't know what the rule is. It depends on the state. But there are a lot of function halls that are just laying dormant and empty. If you really want to make the country greater, Joe, do it at a function hall at a wedding facility. Why do you have to do this outside? No one's going to show up. You don't want them to be there anyway. Joe would not listen to me. So far, he's insisting that he's going to have it outside. He says, oh, please don't. You're making me nervous here, Joe. But I'm looking forward to great stuff from him and in his administration. And just, you know, give me a little breath of fresh air, will you, please? Thank you very much. Thank you. Anyway, that's tomorrow. So that's the calendar. That's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. I don't know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a guest coming up just a little bit later in the program, not too much later. Don't make it too late, because I go to bed early. Yeah, I've been going to bed earlier and earlier. Yeah, I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do this show, and I'm back in bed by 7 a.m., and that's pretty much it. Look, this isn't my first bar mitzvah. I didn't particularly care for the first one, to be honest with you. Speaking of rodeos, can you imagine growing up and saying to yourself, you know, I know what I want to be, and your parents say, what do you want to be? Do you want to be a president? Ooh, no one wants to be that anymore. Never mind. Except for just a couple of people. What do you want to be? Do you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, an entertainer? A talk show host? What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a rodeo clown. What? Yeah, I want to be a rodeo clown. Not just any clown. No. Oh, there are clowns. There are circus clowns. No more circuses, but plenty of circus clowns. Yeah, that would be fun. But no, I want to be a rodeo clown. I want to put makeup on, big floppy shoes, polka dots and stripes and plaids all at once, orange hair, a big bright nose, face paint all over the place, and I want to run around an arena where bulls and broncos are let loose, and I want to be a first responder in a clown uniform to save the life of a cowboy. Because believe me, nothing is worth saving in this country if it isn't a cowboy that fell off of a wild animal, and I want to be the one to save them. It's a rodeo clown's life for me. Yes, dressed in my official uniform, I want to save cowboys who made the mental decision to prove their machoism in front of people that don't care by riding wild horses that don't want you on their back and bulls that would rather snuff you out and kill you than kiss you. Those are the kind of people I want to save by running into a horrible situation with clown makeup on. I want to be brought to the hospital with wounds to my stomach from bullhorns. Yes, bleeding on a table in an emergency room, wearing clown makeup and a big bright red nose and floppy shoes. That's the way I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. Somewhere, anywhere, on the wall in a rodeo clown hall of fame is a rodeo clown who gave his life, or her life, I suppose you can have rodeo clownesses, or gave her life in order to save a cowboy who is in peril. These are men and women of our country that have done nothing, basically, but been martyrs and heroes and heronesses. Yeah, I know. Don't you feel small now? Not having chosen the life of a rodeo clown for yourself. Think of the traveling and getting to see the world and all the dark alleys. And oh, man, I miss it. I miss it. I do. Spending your life in a trailer with other rodeo clowns and cowboys. And yeah. I don't know if there are any cowgirls. Actually, cowgirl is not. Cowboy? Hey, cowboy, that should be an insult. Who are you calling a cowboy? You look like a cow. You walk like a cow. You're a cowboy. Hey, cowboy, don't you ever call me that again. Oh, really? Cowboy. How demeaning. And then there's cowgirl. What the hell does that mean? Hey, cowgirl. Moo, cowgirl. Moo. Moo. Hey, cowgirl. Give me some milk, cowgirl. Give me some milk from your udders, cowgirl. Ooh, ooh. Don't you dare call me that. How dare you? Hey, cow-looking girl. Whoa, what an insult. I don't know. I have no idea. All right. We have our guest coming up at this particular juncture in time. Our guest is well-seasoned, has been seasoned very well with salt, pepper, and a nice mesquite rub. Do you like a mesquite rub at the end of a hard day? You know, your body's aching. You're feeling really run down, and you open up that jar of mesquite rub, and oh, on the shoulders, it's wonderful. So I have a well-seasoned guest coming up. But first, oh, I can't just go right into this, man. First, this little word from our sponsor. Look, you don't pay for this, do you? I don't think you do. You do in a way, but not any way that you're familiar with. So someone has to pay for this, and the only way that that can possibly be done is for me to have a commercial. Here's a service you might be interested in.
We don't get to choose our family names. We're born into them, and some of them are, quite frankly, a little embarrassing. For many, a burden that follows them through life. If you've got an embarrassing last name, you may have thought about having it legally changed, but perhaps you thought it might be complicated and expensive. Well, I'm here to tell you that having your last name legally changed is simple and cost-effective and will take that lifelong burden away in just a few easy steps. Call me today, Attorney Jim Cockwaffle, with the offices of Cockwaffle and Cumstein. We know what you're going through.
Linda Cunningham joins us now. She has a book, Early Thursday, A War, A Hurricane, A Miracle. Thanks for being with us today, Linda.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. This is your first book, I understand?
Yes.
And it's interesting because this is a novel, but it's based on a true event. And every once in a while, you'll find that. But in your case, you actually were at this true event. You were a part of it, I understand.
Yes. I was in this hurricane as a child. Wow. The hurricane, it was Hurricane Audrey in 1957 that hit Cameron Parish, Cameron, Louisiana, the town of Cameron, Louisiana, mm-hmm. Which is in the southeast, southwest corner of Louisiana.
Right.
And this hurricane came in early, and thus the title of the book, Early Thursday.
Yeah.
It was supposed to come in the next day, and it came in early, and what happened, the water came in first, the rising water, and it covered the roads, and the people were stuck. And so there was almost, over 450 people killed, drowned in this hurricane. And my father was director of civil defense, and I saw all the coroner's pictures. I heard all of the stories. We had we called them refugees then. Mm-hmm. We had them, people that survived it, they needed a place to stay. So we had them in our home, and our neighbors did also. And I heard their survival stories and how they hung onto trees. And so that's what started this whole book. I heard these people, I heard them cry in the darkest night of their lives. Wow. You know, they lost their children. They were holding on to children, and they dropped them. And it was just quite devastating. And for a nine-year-old to hear all of that, it changed me. And I knew I had to write about this as an adult. I knew I had to let this go. And so I just spun a story about it. And the main character is Walt LeCour, and he's a Cajun from Cameron, Louisiana. And he goes through this hurricane, and survives it, but there's some awful things that happened to him along the way, life-changing things that I can't say because it'll ruin the story, you know.
Wow. So the reader keeps in the back of their mind that this actually happened and that these fictional characters went through things like this as could have been real people.
That's exactly right. It's historical, historical fiction.
Yeah.
So it's a true story about the hurricane. And a couple of the events in the book are true stories that I heard from my father. And so as in the end, as cathartic as it was for my character, it was cathartic for me, too, because I released all of this, these images. And I started out in screenwriting, so I'm very visual. I write a very visual story, and I really paint a picture, and it has a lot of emotion in it. And it was just a wonderful project to be a part of.
There have been a lot of tragic hurricanes since in the Louisiana area. And I are you still in Louisiana?
No, I live in Texas, on the east side of of Houston, northeast Houston.
Yeah.
We're part of Houston, but we call ourselves Kingwood.
Yeah. Well, there have been quite a few... quite a few incidents in that area too.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've had Hurricane Harvey. We had 3 feet of water in our house.
I mean, when that occurred, did that bring back? Did that just boil these memories back again? I assume they did.
It did. Yeah. It did. It made me wonder. Gosh, did I bring this on myself?
Is it following you?
Right.
Well, you know, there's somewhat of a lesson there that we all confront these tragic situations, but we get through them, but they stay with us and until we do something about it. And even then, it's a huge speed bump in one's memory, I suppose.
That's a beautiful way of saying it. It's a huge speed bump.
Yeah.
But with my character, Walt, you know, we see him as a child growing up in this community and what he goes through to survive. And so we know he survives because he's an old man telling this story.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what he went through afterwards, it's almost like PTSD.
You know? Well, very much and, so. My God, I can imagine.
Right.
Well, we don't want to reveal too much of the book, and I know our time is short, but it's an incredible piece. I have read some of it. They gave me an advance on it. And,
good.
It's pretty cool. Are you... After writing this, are you looking at something in the future along with this particular career here?
Yes, absolutely. Right now, I'm writing a story. It'll be historical fiction also, but it has to do with my father's World War II diary. He was in Merrill's Marauders, and they recently won the Congressional Gold Medal and for their unit. And so... this was the outfit that went behind Japanese lines in Burma in 1943. And they have quite a survival story. These people are just incredible. And I have my father's daily diary from over there. Oh, so wow. I'm going to spin a story there, but I'm going to use the real diary. I will publish the real diary.
Wow. Well, the book is called Early Thursday, A War, A Hurricane, A Miracle. It's available now, and I assume on Amazon and all the regular outlets. Is that right?
Yes, yes, all of the major outlets.
Oh, yeah.
And it has 5 stars. I've been getting great reviews.
Cool. That's fantastic. Is there a website that people can visit in these website days?
Yes. Well, they can go on Facebook for Linda S. Cunningham, and there's also a wonderful trailer on YouTube.
Oh, good.
But it's Linda S. Cunningham. There are a lot of Linda Cunninghams out there, so I have to distinguish myself a little bit and put the S in there. So look for YouTube trailer. It's a wonderful trailer.
Wonderful. Hey, it's a pleasure speaking to you, and continued success.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having
me. You're very welcome. You take care now.
You too. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there you go. Hey, have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace.